Once this was done, all wrongdoing vanished from Lacedaemon. For no one could any longer steal, take bribes, defraud, or plunder, since such money could neither be hidden away, nor was it desirable to possess, nor safe to use, nor could it safely be brought in or taken out. In addition to this, he also carried out an expulsion of foreigners bringing in every kind of superfluous luxury, so that no merchant, sophist, seer, or itinerant charlatan, nor any craftsman of fine furnishings, entered Sparta. For he allowed them no coinage of easy use, but only the iron kind, worth by weight an aegonet and mina, though in purchasing power only 4 coppers. And intending to attack luxury and remove the eager desire for wealth, he introduced the common messes. To those who asked why he had established these and had divided the citizens under arms into small groups, he said, "So that they may promptly receive their orders, and so that, if any of them attempt some innovation, the wrongdoing may be confined to a few. There is equal sharing of food and drink among them, so that in food or drink, or even in bedding or furnishings or anything else, the rich man has no advantage whatsoever over the poor." Having thus made wealth an object of no envy, since no one could use it or display it, he used to say to his companions, "How fine it is, my friends, to show through one's actions what wealth truly is. Blind." He also took care that no one should dine beforehand at home, and then go to the common mess already full of other food or drink. The rest would reproach the man who did not eat or drink with them, as being intemperate and too soft for the common way of life, and whoever was caught doing so was punished. Indeed, when King Agis, after a long time, had returned from a campaign, he had defeated the Athenians, and wished to dine with his wife for a single day and sent for his portion, the Polemarchs did not send it. And when this became known to the Ephors the next day, he was fined by them for it. The wealthy, angered by such laws, rose up against Lycurgus, reviled him, and hurled things at him, wishing to stone him to death. And as he fled, pursued, he ran through the marketplace and outran the rest of them, taking refuge in the temple of Athena of the Bronze House. But Alcander, pursuing him, as he turned around, struck out his eye with a staff. Though this man was handed over to him by public decree for punishment, Lycurgus neither mistreated him nor reproached him, but keeping him to live with him, made him into an admirer of himself and of the way of life he shared with him, and in general a devoted lover of his discipline. In commemoration of the suffering, he founded, in the precinct of Athena of the Bronze House, a shrine of Athena, calling her Optoletes, for the Dorians there call the eyes Optoloi. When asked why he did not make use of written laws, he said, "Because men who are educated and brought up in the proper discipline can judge for themselves what is useful in each situation." Again, when some asked why he ordered that the roofs of houses be made only with an axe, and the doors only with a saw and no other tool, he said, "So that the citizens may be moderate in all they bring into their houses, and possess nothing that is envied among other peoples." It is said that from this custom, King Leodocides the Elder, dining once at someone's house, and seeing that the ceiling was expensively and elaborately coffered, asked his host whether trees grow foursquare in that country. When asked why he forbade repeated campaigns against the same enemies, he said, "So that they, growing used to constantly defending themselves, should not become experienced in war." For this reason, it was thought no small fault in Agesilaus that, by his continual invasions and campaigns into Boeotia, he made the Thebans into a match for the Lacedaemonians. Indeed, seeing him wounded, Antalcidas said, "A fine reward you are receiving, for teaching men to fight who neither wished to nor knew how." When another asked why he trained the bodies of the girls with running, wrestling, and throwing the discus and javelin, he said, "So that the seed of those to be born, taking a strong start in strong bodies, might grow well, and that the women themselves, enduring their labor pains with strength, might contend both easily and well against their pains, and, should the need arise, might be able to fight on behalf of themselves, their children, and their fatherland." When some found fault with the girls appearing unclothed in the processions and asked the reason, he said, "So that, practicing the same pursuits as the men, they might fall short in nothing, neither in bodily strength and health, nor in ambition and excellence of soul, and might look down on the reputation prized by the common crowd." A similar story is told of Gorgo, the wife of Leonidas. When some foreign woman, it seems, said to her, "You Spartan women alone rule your men," she answered. "Yes, because we alone give birth to men. And by barring unmarried men from watching the gymnopaedia and attaching disgrace to it, he took great care over the begetting of children, and he deprived unmarried men of the honor and service that the young owed their elders. And no one found fault with what was said to Dersilidas, though he was a distinguished general. For when he approached, one of the younger men did not yield his seat to him, saying, 'You, after all, did not father a son who would yield his seat to me.' When someone asked why he made it law that girls be given in marriage without dowries, he said, 'So that some might not remain unmarried for lack of means, nor be sought after for their wealth, but that each man, looking to the girl's character, might make his choice on the basis of merit.' For this reason, too, he banished cosmetic adornment from the city. And when he had also fixed the proper age for both brides and bridegrooms, he told the one who asked about it that it was, so that children born might be strong, being born of parents in their prime. To the man who wondered why he prevented a married man from sleeping with his wife, and instead ordered him to spend most of the day with his age mates and to rest with them all through the night, being with his bride only secretly and with discretion, he said, "So that they may be strong in body, not growing sated with one another, and remain ever fresh in their affection, and produce hardier offspring." And he banished perfume as a corruption and ruin of oil, and dyeing as a flattery of the senses, and made Sparta inaccessible to all craftsmen of bodily adornment, on the grounds that they debased their crafts through bad workmanship. Such was the chastity of the women in those days, and so far removed were they from the later looseness concerning them, that it was, until then, unthinkable that adultery could occur among them. And a saying is recorded of a certain Gerardus, one of the very ancient Spartans, who, when asked by a foreigner what happened to adulterers among them, since the foreigner saw nothing legislated on the matter by Lycurgus, replied, "Stranger, no one becomes an adulterer among us." And when the man rejoined, "But if one should," Gerardus said, "he pays a bull so large that, stretching up over Tagetus, it can drink from the Eurotas." And when the man, astonished, said, "But how could there be so huge an ox?" Gerardus laughed and said, "How indeed could there be an adulterer in Sparta, where wealth, luxury, and personal adornment are held in dishonor, while modesty, good order, and obedience to one's leaders are held in the highest esteem?" To the man who demanded that a democracy be established in the city, Lycurgus said, "You first make a democracy in your own house." When someone asked why he ordered the sacrifices to the gods to be so small and inexpensive, he said, "So that we may never fail to honor the divine." Since he permitted the citizens to compete only in those contests in which the hand is not raised in surrender, someone asked the reason, and he said, "So that none of them might become accustomed to giving up under exertion." When someone asked why he ordered frequent changes of camp, he said, "So that we may do more harm to our enemies." When another asked why he forbade siege warfare against walls, he said, "So that our best men should not be killed by some woman, or child, or similarly insignificant person." To Thebans, who consulted him about the sacred rite and the mourning that they perform for Leucothea, he advised, "If you consider her a goddess, do not mourn her. If a mortal woman, do not perform sacred rites for her as though she were a god." To citizens who asked, "How might we ward off an invasion of our enemies?" he said, "By remaining poor, and by not letting one man claim to be greater than another." And again, when some asked about city walls, he said that no city is unwalled which is crowned with men rather than with bricks. The Spartans also took care of their hair, recalling a saying of Lycurgus on the subject, that it makes handsome men more comely and ugly men more terrifying. He instructed that, in war, once they had routed and defeated an enemy, they should pursue only far enough to secure the victory, and then withdraw at once, declaring that it was neither noble nor Greek to slaughter those who had given way, but rather that such men should be spared. This was not only honorable and magnanimous, but also useful. For those fighting against them, knowing that the Spartans spared those who yielded, but killed those who stood their ground, would judge that fleeing was more advantageous than standing fast. And when someone asked why he forbade the despoiling of the enemy dead, he said, "So that men, busying themselves over the spoils, should not neglect the battle, but should preserve their poverty along with their discipline, Lysander. when Dionysius, the tyrant of Sicily, sent expensive robes for his daughters, would not accept them, saying he feared that on account of them the girls would appear all the more unattractive. Yet a little later, sent as ambassador to the same tyrant from the same city, when Dionysius sent him two robes and told him to choose whichever he wished and bring it to his daughter, he said that she herself would choose better, and taking both, he departed. Lysander, who had become a formidable sophist and embellished most of his affairs with deceptions, holding that justice consists solely in advantage and honor in expediency, used to say that truth is better than falsehood, but that the worth and value of each is determined by its usefulness. To those who blamed him for accomplishing most of his business by trickery rather than by direct, straightforward success, as unworthy of Heracles, he laughed and said that where the lion's skin does not reach, one must sew on the fox's. When others reproached him for the oaths he had broken, which he had sworn at Miletus, he said, "Boys are to be deceived with knuckle bones, men with oaths." And having defeated the Athenians by an ambush at Aegospotami and pressing them with famine, he brought the city to submission and wrote to the ephors, "Athens is taken." And to the Argives, who were disputing with the Lacedaemonians about boundary lines and claiming that they had the more just case, he drew his sword and said, "He who holds this speaks best about boundary lines." Seeing that the Boeotians were wavering as he marched through their country, he sent men to ask whether he should pass through with spears upright, or with spears upright or leveled, as he marched through their country. When a man of Megara spoke to him with frankness in a public assembly, he said, "Stranger, your words need a city behind them." When the Corinthians had revolted, and he was passing along their walls and saw the Spartans hesitating to attack, and a hare was seen leaping across the ditch, he said, "Are you not ashamed, Spartans, to fear enemies of such a sort that hares sleep undisturbed beside their walls out of sheer idleness?" In Samothrace, when he was seeking an oracle, the priest bade him tell what was the most lawless deed he had done in his life. So he asked, "Must I do this at your bidding, or at the gods?" When the priest said, "At the gods," he said, "Then get out of my way, and I will tell them if they ask." When a Persian asked him what constitution he most approved, he said, "One that assigns to the brave and to the cowardly what is fitting for each." To one who said that he praised him and greeted him with excessive affection, he said, "I have two oxen in my field. Though both are silent, I know precisely which is idle and which does the work." When someone reviled him, he said, "Keep talking, my little stranger, keep talking and leave nothing out, if you can empty your soul of the evils of which you seem to be full." Some time later, after Lysander's death, a dispute arose among the allies, and Agesilaus went to Lysander's house to examine the papers concerning it, for Lysander had kept these in his own possession. There he found a book written by Lysander concerning the constitution, arguing that the kingship ought to be taken from the Europontids and the Agids and put up for general decision, the choice being made from the best men, so that the honor should belong not to the descendants of Heracles, but to whoever, like Heracles, was judged by virtue, the very quality by which Heracles himself had been raised to honors among the gods. He was eager to publish this speech to the citizens, to show what sort of citizen Lysander had secretly been, and to discredit Lysander's friends. But they say that Lacratides, who was then presiding over the ephors, fearing that the speech, once read aloud, might prove persuasive, restrained Agesilaus and told him that Lysander ought not to be dug up again, but that the speech ought to be buried along with him, composed as it was with such cunning and persuasive skill. As for those who had become engaged to Lysander's daughters, and then, after his death, when he was found to be poor, broke off the engagements, the ephors fined them, because, while they had courted him thinking him rich, once his poverty revealed him to be just and honest they had despised him. Nemitz, sent as an ambassador, when someone there congratulated him on having many friends, asked whether the man had any test by which one of many friends is tried, and when the other pressed to learn it, he said, "Misfortune." Nicander, when someone said that the Argives spoke ill of him, said, "Then they are paying the penalty for speaking ill of good men." And when someone asked why they wore their hair long and grew their beards, he said, "Because a man's own natural adornment is of all the finest and the least costly." When one of the Athenians said, "You Spartans, Nicander, cling too much to leisure," he said, You speak the truth, but we are not busy, as you are, about whatever happens to come along. Panthotes, on an embassy to Asia, when they showed him a strong fortification wall, said, "By the gods, strangers, what a fine women's chamber." And in the academy, when the philosophers were discussing many serious matters, and afterward they asked Panthotes what he thought of these arguments, he said, "What else but serious? Yet they are of no use if you do not put them into practice." Pausanias, son of Cleombrotus, when the Delians were pleading their case about the island against the Athenians, and saying that by their own law women do not give birth on the island and the dead are not buried there, said, "How then could this be your fatherland, in which none of you has been born and none will be?" When exiles urged him to lead his army against the Athenians, saying that when he was proclaimed victor at the Olympic Games they alone had hissed him, he said, "What then do you suppose men who hissed me when they were prospering will do, now that they are faring badly?" When someone asked why they made the poet Tyatius a citizen, he said, "So that our leader might never appear to be a foreigner." To a man weak in body, who advised risking battle against the enemy both by land and by sea, he said, "Will you then strip and show us what sort of man you are, you who advise us how to fight?" When some men marveled at the costliness of the barbarians' clothing among the spoils, he said, "Better that men themselves be worth much than that they possess things worth much." After the victory over the Medes at Plataea, he ordered his attendants to set out the Persian dinner that had been prepared beforehand. And when this proved to be of astonishing extravagance, he said, "By the gods, the Persian was a glutton to come after our barley cake when he had all this." Pausanias, son of Plestonax, to one who asked why it was not permitted among them to alter any of the ancient laws, said, "Because the laws must be masters of the men, not the men masters of the laws." When in exile at Tegea he was praising the Spartans, someone said, "Why then did you not stay in Sparta instead of going into exile?" He said, "Because physicians too are accustomed to spend their time not among the healthy, but where the sick are." When someone asked him how they might be able to defeat the Thracians, he said, "If we appoint the best man as general." When a physician visited him and said, "You have nothing wrong with you," he said, "No, for I am not using you as my physician." When one of his friends reproached him for speaking ill of a certain physician, though he had had no experience of him and had suffered no wrong from him, he said, "Because if I had had experience of him, I would not be alive." When the physician said to him, "You have grown old," he said, "That is because I did not employ you as my physician." He used to say that the best physician was one who did not let the sick rot away slowly, but buried them as quickly as possible. Pateretus, when someone said that the enemy were many, said, "Then we shall be all the more glorious, for we shall kill more of them." Seeing a man who was soft by nature but was praised by the citizens for his gentleness, he said, "One ought not to praise men who are like women, nor women who are like men, unless some need overtakes the woman." When he was not chosen among the 300, the rank that held the foremost honor in the city, he went away cheerful and smiling. And when the ephors called him back and asked why he was laughing, he said, "Because I am glad on the city's behalf that it has 300 citizens better than I am." Plestarchus, son of Leonidas, to one who asked why they were not named after the first kings, said, "Because those men needed to lead or to be kings, whereas their successors have no such need at all." When a certain advocate kept saying ridiculous things, he said, "Will you not take care, stranger, by joking constantly, not to become ridiculous yourself, just as those who wrestle constantly become mere wrestlers?" To one who was imitating a nightingale, he said, "Stranger, I would rather listen to the nightingale itself." When someone said that a certain slanderer had praised him, he said, "I am amazed no one has told him that I am dead, for that man cannot speak well of anyone while he is alive." Plestonax, son of Pausanias, when a certain Attic orator called the Spartans uneducated, said, "You speak truly, for we alone of the Greeks have learned nothing bad from you." Polydorus, son of Alcamenes, when someone kept making frequent threats against his enemies, said, "Do you not realize that you are using up most of your vengeance beforehand?" When he was leading his army out against Messene, someone asked whether he intended to fight against his brothers, and he said, "No, I am marching against the part of the country that has not yet been allotted." Again, after the Argives had been utterly defeated in the pitched battle of the 300, the allies urged Polydorus not to let the opportunity slip, but to advance upon the enemy's wall and take the city, since it would be very easy now that the men had perished and only the women were left. But he said to them, "To conquer my opponents by fighting on equal terms that I hold to be honorable, but having fought only for the boundaries of our territory, to desire also to seize their city, that I do not consider just, for I came to recover land, not to capture a city." When asked why the Spartans face danger bravely in war, he said, "Because they have learned to respect their commanders, not to fear them." Polycrates, on an embassy to the king's generals along with others, when they were asked whether they had come in a private or a public capacity, said, "If we succeed, publicly, if not, privately." Phoebidas, before the peril at Leuctra, when some said that this day would reveal the brave man, said that the day was worth a great deal, since it had the power to reveal the brave man. Sous, it is said, when besieged in a harsh and waterless place by the Clatorians, agreed to relinquish to them the land he had won by the spear, on condition that all his men with him should drink from the nearby spring, which the enemy was guarding. When the oaths had been sworn, he gathered his men and offered the kingship to whoever did not drink. But no one held out, and all drank. He himself, however, came down last of all, only sprinkled himself with the water while the enemy still stood by, and then went away and kept possession of the land, on the ground that he had not drunk. Telecles, to one who said that his father spoke ill of him, said, "If he did not have reason to say it, he would not say it." When his brother said that the citizens did not treat him in the same way as they treated him, though they were of the same stock, but rather more inconsiderately, he said, "That is because you do not know how to be wronged, and I do." When asked why it was the custom among them for the young to rise before their elders, he said, "So that, by showing such respect toward those who are not their kin, they may honor their own parents all the more." When someone asked how much property he possessed, he said, "No more than is sufficient." Charilus, when asked why Lycurgus made so few laws, said, "Because men of few words have need of few laws too." When someone asked why they lead unmarried girls out in public unveiled but married women veiled, he said, "Because the girls still need to find husbands, while the married women need to keep the ones they have." When one of the helots behaved too insolently toward him, he said, "If I were not angry, I would kill you." When someone asked him what constitution he considered best, he said, "One in which the greatest number of citizens are willing to compete with one another in virtue, without civil strife." When someone asked why all their images of the gods were set up armed, he said, "So that we may never transfer to the gods the reproaches made against men for cowardice, and so that the young may never pray to the gods unarmed." To one who asked why they wore their hair long, he said, "Because among adornments, this one is natural and costs nothing." To Samian envoys who spoke at excessive length, the Spartans said, "We have forgotten the beginning, and we did not understand the end, because we had forgotten the beginning." When an orator drew out a long speech and asked for their answer so that he might report it to his citizens, they said, "Then report this, that you barely managed to stop talking, and we barely managed to keep listening." To the Thebans who were disputing certain points with them, they said, "One must either think less of oneself or have greater power." A Spartan, asked why he grew the hairs of his beard so long, said, "So that, seeing the white hairs, I may do nothing unworthy of them." Another, when someone asked, "Why do you use short daggers?" said, "So that we may come to close quarters with the enemy." When someone was praising certain men as the best fighters, a Spartan said, "At Troy." Another, hearing that some men who had already dined were being forced to drink, said, "Are they also forced to eat?" When Pindar wrote, "Athens, bulwark of Greece," a Spartan said that Greece would surely collapse, resting on such a bulwark as that. When someone, seeing in a painted panel Spartans being slaughtered by Athenians, said, "Brave men, these Athenians," a Spartan retorted, "In the painting, yes." To a man who kept lending an ear to slanderous accusations, a Spartan said, "Stop supplying your ears against me." To a man being punished who said, "I sinned unwillingly," someone said, "Then be punished unwillingly too." Someone, seeing men sitting on stools in a latrine, said, "May it never be my lot to sit in a place from which one cannot rise up for an elder." Once, when some Chians on a visit vomited after dinner in the ephors' hall and fouled the seats where the ephors themselves sat, at first the Spartans searched vigorously for the culprits, in case they should turn out to be citizens. But when they learned that they were Chians, they issued a proclamation that Kayans were permitted to behave outrageously. When someone saw hard almonds being sold at double the price, he said, "Are stones so scarce then?" Someone having plucked a nightingale and finding very little flesh on it said, "You are a voice and nothing else." One of the Spartans, seeing Diogenes the Cynic embracing a bronze statue when it was bitterly cold, asked him if he was cold. And when Diogenes denied it, he said, "Then what great thing are you doing?" A man of Metapontum, reproached for cowardice by a Spartan, said, "And yet we hold no small share of other people's land." The Spartan replied, "Then you are not only cowards, but unjust as well." A visitor to Sparta, lacing his sandal while standing upright on one leg, said to a Spartan, "I do not think you, Spartan, could stand on one foot as long as I can." The Spartan replied, "No, indeed, but then there is not a single goose that cannot." When someone was extolling himself for his skill in rhetoric, a Spartan said, "But by the twin gods, there neither is nor ever shall be an art that has laid hold of anything apart from truth." When an Argive once said, "Among us there are many graves of Spartans," a Spartan said, "But among us there is not a single grave of an Argive," meaning that they themselves had often set foot on Argive soil, while the Argives had never set foot on Spartan soil. A Spartan taken captive and put up for sale, when the auctioneer announced, "I am selling a Spartan," silenced him by saying, "Cry me as a prisoner of war." One of the men serving as soldiers under Lysimachus, when he asked him whether he was one of the Helots, said, "Do you really suppose that a Spartan would come to serve for your 4 obols a day?" When the Thebans, having defeated the Spartans at Leuctra, came right up to the Eurotas and someone boasted, "Where are the Spartans now?" A Spartan who had been taken captive by them said, "They are not here, for otherwise you came here." When the Athenians, after surrendering their city, asked to be allowed to keep only Samos, they said, "When you did not have even yourselves, do you now seek to have others too?" From this comes the proverb, "He who does not possess himself wants to have Samos." When the Lacedaemonians took a city by force, the ephors said, "The wrestling ground of the young men is gone, the young men will no longer have opponents." When the king of another city, one which had often caused trouble for the Spartans, promised to destroy it utterly, they would not allow it, saying, "By no means destroy or remove the whetstone of the young men." They did not set trainers over the wrestlers, so that rivalry should arise not from skill but from courage. That is why Lysander too, when asked how Charon had beaten him, said, "By his resourcefulness." When Philip wrote, on arriving in their country, to ask whether he should come to them as friend or enemy, they answered, "Neither." Having sent an envoy to Antigonus, son of Demetrius, when they learned that he had addressed him as king, they find him, even though he was bringing each of them a bushel of wheat from Antigonus during a famine. When Demetrius complained that they had sent only one envoy to him, they said, "Is not one enough when sent to one?" When someone offered excellent advice but was himself a wicked man, they accepted the advice, but took it from him and credited it instead to another man who had lived well. When brothers were quarreling with one another, they fined the father, because he allowed his sons to be at odds. They fined a lyre player who had come to live among them, because he played the cithara with his fingers. Two boys were fighting, and one wounded the other with a sickle, a mortal blow. When the wounded boy's companions, as they were about to be separated, promised to avenge him and kill the one who had struck him, he said, "By no means, in the god's name, for it would not be just. I too would have done this, had I been quicker and proven the better man." Another boy, when the season came in which it was customary for free boys to steal whatever they could, and it was shameful only to be caught, stole a live fox cub together with the boys who were with him and gave it to him to guard. When those who had lost it came looking for it, he happened to have hidden the cub under his cloak. And though the animal grew savage and tore into his side as far as his entrails, he kept still, so as not to be found out. Afterward, when those men had left and his companions saw what had happened and blamed him, saying it would have been better to show the fox cub than to hide it until death, he said, "Not at all better to die without yielding to the pain than to save one's life shamefully by being exposed through weakness." Some people who met Spartans on the road said, "You are in luck, robbers just left this spot." They replied, "No, by any alias, rather, it is they who are lucky not to have met us." A Spartan, asked what he knew, said, "How to be free." A Spartan boy, taken captive by King Antigonus and sold, was obedient to his purchaser in everything he thought fit for a free man to do. But when the man ordered him to carry a chamber pot, he would not bear it, saying, "I will not be a slave." When the man insisted, the boy climbed onto the roof and said, "You will learn the value of your purchase," then threw himself down and died. Another being sold when someone said, "If I buy you, will you be useful?" replied, "Even if you do not buy me." Another captive being sold when the herald announced that he was selling a slave said, "Damn you, say a prisoner of war." A Spartan had a fly as the device on his shield, and one no bigger than a real fly. When some mocked him, saying he had done this so as not to be noticed, he said, "No, so that I may be seen, for I approach the enemy so closely that they can see how big my device is." Another, when a liar was passed around at a symposium, said, "It is not Laconian to play the fool." A Spartan asked whether the road to Sparta was safe, said, "That depends on how you sit, for lions go wherever they please, but we hunt hares from where we sit." In a wrestling match, when his opponent kept striking idly around his neck and dragging him to the ground, since the man who had fallen upon him outmatched him in strength, he bit his arm, and the other said, "You bite, Spartan, like the women." "No," said the first, "but like the lions." A lame man going out to war, when some followed him mocking and laughing, turned and said, "Wretched fellows, one must fight the enemy not by running, but by standing firm and holding one's post." Another, shot with an arrow and dying, said that what troubled him was not that he was going to die, but that he had been killed by an effeminate archer without having accomplished anything. Someone who had put up at an inn and given meat to the innkeeper to prepare, when the innkeeper asked also for cheese and oil, said, "Well, if I had had cheese, would I still have needed meat?" To someone who called Lampes the Aeginetan blessed, because he seemed to be the richest man, owning many merchant ships, a Spartan said, "I have no regard for prosperity that hangs from ropes." When someone told a Spartan he was lying, he answered, "We are free men, but the others, if they do not speak the truth, will pay for it." When someone proposed to set a corpse upright, and though he tried every way could not, he said, "By the two gods, there must be something missing inside." Tinicius, when his son Thrasybulus died, bore it with fortitude, and an epigram was made about it. Thrasybulus came to Patana on his shield, without breath, having received 7 wounds from the Argives, showing them all in front. And the old man Tinicius, laying his bloodied son on the pyre, said this, "Let cowards be wept for, but you, my child, I will bury without tears, you who were mine and Sparta's alike." When a bath attendant poured a great deal of water over Alcibiades the Athenian, a Spartan said, "Why so much, as if for a clean man? You should pour more on someone truly filthy." When Philip of Macedon commanded something by letter, the Lacedaemonians wrote back, "Concerning what you wrote to us now." When he invaded Laconia and everyone thought they would be destroyed, he said to one of the Spartans, "What will you do now, Spartans?" "What else?" the man replied, "then die bravely, for we alone of the Greeks have learned to be free and not to obey others." After the defeat at Aga's hands, when Antipater demanded 50 boys as hostages, Ediacles, then Ephor, said they would not give the boys, lest they grow up untrained in their ancestral discipline and so fail to become citizens. But they would give twice as many old men or women instead, if he wished. When Antipater threatened terrible things if he did not receive them, they answered together, "If you impose things harsher than death, we will die all the more readily." An old man at Olympia, eager to watch the contest in progress, could not find a seat, and going about to many places, he was insulted and mocked, no one making room for him. But when he came to where the Lacedaemonians sat, all the boys stood up, and many of the men too, giving up their place. When the assembled Greeks marked this custom with applause and praised it highly, the old man, shaking his gray head and gray beard and weeping, said, "Alas for the troubles of Greece, all the Greeks know what is right, but only the Lacedaemonians practice it." Some say the same thing happened at Athens too. For during the Panathenaea, the Athenians mistreated an old man, calling him over as if to give him a seat, but then, when he came, not receiving him. And as he passed through nearly everyone and reached the seats of the Lacedaemonian envoys, all of them rose from their benches and made way for him. The crowd, admiring what had happened, applauded with great approval, and one of the Spartans said, "By the two gods, the Athenians know what is right, but they do not do it." A beggar asked a Spartan for alms. He said, "But if I give to you, you will only beg the more, and the man who first gave to you is responsible for this disgrace of yours, since he made you idle." A Spartan, seeing someone collecting money for the gods, said, "I pay no heed to gods poorer than myself." Someone who caught an adulterer with an ugly woman said, "Wretch, what compulsion drove you to it?" Another, hearing an orator turning out long, elaborate periods, said, "By the two gods, the man is bold indeed, he twists his tongue so skillfully around nothing at all." Someone who came to Laestemon and saw the honor shown by the young toward their elders said, "Only in Sparta does it pay to grow old." A Spartan, asked what sort of poet Tyatius was, said, "Good at kindling the souls of the young." Another, suffering from his eyes, went out to war nonetheless. And when some said to him, "Where are you going in this state, and what will you accomplish?" he said, "Even if I do nothing else, I will blunt an enemy's sword." Bulis and Sperthias, Lacedaemonians, went of their own will to Xerxes, king of the Persians, to pay the penalty which Laestemon owed by oracle, because they had killed heralds sent to them by the Persian king. Coming before Xerxes, they bade him deal with them however he wished on behalf of the Lacedaemonians. He, admiring them, released the men and asked them to remain with him. "And how could we live here?" they said, "having abandoned our fatherland and its laws and these men, for whose sake we have come so long away to die." When the general Hydarnes pressed them further, saying they would receive honor equal to the king's closest and most favored friends, they said, "You seem not to understand what freedom is worth. No man of sense would exchange it for the kingdom of Persia." A Spartan, since on the previous day his host had turned him away, but on the next day received him lavishly with rich bedding, stepped onto the bedding and trampled it, remarking that it was because of things like this that he had not even slept on a mat the day before. Another, coming to Athens and seeing the Athenians auctioning off salt fish and other provisions, collecting taxes, running brothels, and doing other shameful things without regarding any of it as disgraceful. When he returned to his own country, and his fellow citizens asked him what things were like at Athens, he said, "All fine," speaking ironically, and implying that at Athens everything is considered fine and nothing shameful. Another, asked about something, answered no. When the questioner said, "You are lying," he replied, "then you see how foolish you are to ask about things you already know." Some Spartans once came on an embassy to Lygdamis the tyrant, and when he kept postponing their meeting again and again, and someone remarked that in the end he was simply being weak about the whole matter, the envoys said, "Tell him that, by the gods, we have not come to wrestle with him, but to talk with him." Someone initiating a Spartan into the mysteries asked him what was the most impious thing he was conscious of having done. He said, "The gods know." When the man pressed him further, saying, "You must tell me at all costs," the Spartan asked in return, "Must I tell it to you or to the god?" And when the man said, "To the god," he said, "Then you may leave." Another, passing a tomb at night and imagining he saw some apparition, charged at it, thrusting with his spear and driving it home, said, "Where are you fleeing from me, soul twice dead?" Another, having vowed to throw himself from the Leucadian cliff, climbed up but turned back on seeing the height. When reproached for it, he said, "I did not think my vow needed a greater vow to carry it out." Another, in battle, was about to bring his sword down on an enemy, but when the recall was sounded, he did not strike. When someone asked why, having his enemy at his mercy, he had not killed him, he said, "Because it is better to obey one's commander than to kill." To someone defeated at Olympia, a man said, "Spartan, your opponent proved stronger than you." "No," he replied, "but better at throwing."